This podcast was recorded Thursday, July 11th at 12:33 p.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like the phrase, "I had a bad night," will go back to just meaning one had a couple too many beers or margaritas. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who say one thing privately and say the opposite publicly. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Ohioans' legitimate concerns lead to our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, voters will not get the chance to increase Ohio's minimum wage in this year's election. Supporters of an effort to raise the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour have come up short in their effort to get the proposed amendment on this November's ballot. They needed some 414,000 signatures of registered voters to qualify by this month's deadline. The group Raise the Wage Ohio says it collected some 600,000 signatures, but because many signatures are disqualified, groups usually have to collect about double the required amount, so they possibly were short on that count. And also, state law requires ballot efforts collect the signatures of 5% of registered voters in half of Ohio's counties, 44 counties. Then the group says it did not meet that threshold. So leaders have given up on the plan to get on this November's ballot and will try to get on next year's ballot. Joining us to discuss the campaign and their path forward is Saru Jayaraman. Saru, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What happened with your collection effort?
Well, first, I want to say that we did something extremely different than most campaigns. Instead of hiring a big firm that brings people from out of state and, you know, spends a lot of money collecting signatures, we decided we wanted to hire the people most impacted, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of minimum wage workers, low wage workers who had never actually not just ever canvassed before, frankly, had never registered to vote before. Hundreds of people registered to vote in order to collect signatures for this effort. It was an incredible, it has been an incredible, incredibly, truly people-powered effort. And when it came to the deadline, we had collected more than we needed in terms of, it was actually about 630,000 signatures that we had collected. But we, with all that effort and the hope that people have to get $15 an hour, we wanted to be safe. We wanted to ensure that give people the very best chance of getting that $15. And since we will get $15 in January 2026, whether we're on the November 24 ballot or the November 25 ballot, because it's a two-year phase-in, since that $15 comes at the same time either way, we thought that it would be most prudent to ensure that everybody gets that $15 by turning in way more than the signatures than we need. So that's why we decided to hold actually just for a few months. We're planning to submit the signatures around Labor Day and ensure that this year and ensure that we're on the ballot for next year and really give ourselves, give workers who've been out there collecting in the rain and the hot heat the absolute guarantee that they will get that $15 by January 2026.
And the way, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way the law works, had you taken the risk and submitted these signatures to the Secretary of State and you fell short, then you have a 10-day cure period and you fell short again, you could not, you'd have to start over from scratch, right? You couldn't just click it off to next week, next year rather.
That's right. But this way we're able to use all of the signatures that so many people collected, really thousands of people collected, workers, volunteers, partner organizations. It's all still going to be able to be used, and we're actually going to be submitting it very shortly in just a month and a half, basically. So it doesn't go to waste. If we had submitted, as you said, and they said we fell short, then we'd all be out of luck. But holding on to it, you know, making sure we have the biggest possible margin, using the summer to do that, making sure we're, you know, uplifting the voices of all the rural counties who we really do know want this. I mean, we've talked to so many people in rural counties who all agree, you know, the current minimum wage is just way too low. And I do have to say, in this moment when there's a lot of feeling of hopelessness, some amount of just despair or disgust with the current kind of political environment, everything that's happening, candidates. This is giving people a lot of hope because if you look at every poll, the top issue for working people, people of color, youth, even rural voters, every group I've looked at polling wise, the economy and cost of living is at the top.
But you still failed to, with all this going on, and people say the wages and the inflation and cost of living and paying so much for eggs is top of issue, top of mind. You know, I compare your ballot issue effort to the redistricting. They appear to be making the ballot with a fair amount of ease. You say you used a people-powered effort. You didn't hire an outside firm. But most observers say it's almost impossible to get on the ballot here in the time frames without that outside firm. Was it the outside firms too expensive for your campaign? Was that a factor?
No, we had some outside firms involved, and we did actually, you know, we collected, you know, more than 600,000 mm-hmm. signatures almost entirely from workers. Mm-hmm. So these weren't volunteers. We were paying people a living wage of $25 an hour. I would agree that doing it volunteer is very difficult.
Okay.
But that's not what we did.
But these folks were inexperienced, you said. Some of these folks weren't even registered to vote. So this was their first political experience, right?
It's been an incredible process of mm-hmm. training, honestly, nearly 1,000, mostly young people in getting engaged with the political process. And we came very close to completing by the deadline, and we still will. You know, we'll probably get to over 700,000 by Labor Day. So it's not impossible. It's not that we didn't use any outside assistance. We did. But the majority of this was people powered as opposed to the majority of it being done by a firm.
Initially, the campaign said that your collections in rural counties were dampened due to violence and intimidation toward our low-wage worker of color canvassers who were verbally abused and harassed by those opposing raises for workers. That's a pretty serious allegation. Do you have some evidence you could share with us that happened?
Well, there are at least 40 canvassers who can share their stories of what happened, but I do want to make one correction. Again, it's not that people in rural counties oppose raising wages. Most mm-hmm. people in rural counties overwhelmingly support raising wages. And I think that is why you see attempts by the opposition to, you know, thwart the effort, because they know that when we get on the ballot, we will win. It's so overwhelmingly popular in Ohio in every county. So it isn't that people don't support it. It's that there were people, there were in some instances a sheriff or two who, you know, actually didn't want people from, you know, different backgrounds in rural counties collecting. And that's not a unique experience of ours. But I have to emphasize that.
What do they say? Did they prohibit them from collecting outside of a polling place or outside of a shopping area or something like that? I mean,
that is a lot of what we do. We do go mm-hmm. to grocery stores, but we also knock on doors mm-hmm. of people who have voted in, you know, in ways that seem to support these issues. So we do a combination of door knocking and hotspots. But what I was going to say is that actually what is unique about this issue, what is unique about this effort is the fact that it is so universally supported by people of different races, different backgrounds, different parts of the state. It is why, you know, the dignity of work has been a winning message for Senator Brown, because that is such a universally kind of agreed upon motto, agreed upon value that Ohioans of different political backgrounds agree with.
So you were aiming for this November, but now you're aiming for 2025. 2024 will have a much higher turnout. You'll have the presidential race. You mentioned the Senator Brown's reelection fight. The redistricting question likely will be on the ballot. Would you have stood a better chance of having this pass with that larger turnout than you will have if you get on the ballot in 25?
No, absolutely not. Minimum wage turns out people. It doesn't rely on an election year turnout. It turns out all kinds of new unlikely voters. It's precisely what I was just talking about in terms of the nearly 1,000 people who registered to vote solely in order to work on this issue. It is such a popular issue. It doesn't need any particular election. No matter when it would be on the ballot, people would turn out in large numbers that typically don't turn out to vote themselves a raise. And I'll just give you one quick example. You do recall that last year you had a special election in Ohio, August 1st, and we sent out, we had been collecting signatures for minimum wage even prior to that special election. Now, August 1st is such a terrible time of the year to have an election, but we sent out mailers to people who had signed the minimum wage petition saying, hey, it's important to go turn out on this procedural issue with regard to ballot measures.
Yes, this was the effort to make it harder to change the Constitution.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's important to go vote no on that effort in order to ensure that minimum wage makes it on the ballot. And we were at the polling places on August 1st, and I can't tell you the number of people who came up to us with our mailer and said, hey, is this where I come to vote to raise the minimum wage? They had showed up August 1st thinking, misunderstanding and thinking that that was the day to vote to raise the wage. And that was August.
Yeah. You do have some advantages for 25. It'll be easier to get cheaper advertising time. It'll be cheaper to get TV advertising time next year. Correct?
That's absolutely right. But I'm telling you, we don't need that. It's such a popular issue. People are going to turn out to vote themselves a raise. I mean, the word of mouth already that we've seen among working people that this is moving has been pretty extraordinary. So yes, it'll be a lot easier to get attention without a crowded field of this year. It'll be important also because I think there's going to be people who are unhappy regardless of what happens in November. And so again, this is an issue that appeals to people across the political spectrum. It could be an issue that brings people together after a very divisive election this November.
We have the campaign coming. If you do get on the ballot, and it'll be delayed till 25, so we'll have plenty of time to sort of flesh out the arguments for and against the raising the wage. But one of the things that I think is a factor, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the market itself seems to be coming close to that $15 an hour minimum wage. ZipRecruiter, for what it's worth, put the average Ohio restaurant worker at $17 an hour. Indeed has it at $13 an hour. ZipRecruiter puts the average warehouse workers in Ohio at $15 an hour. If wages are already at that $15 an hour mark or close to it, does that hurt your campaign at all? Does it hurt your message at all?
No, not at all. And that you might be looking at ZipRecruiter. I'm looking at U.S. Department of Labor government, Bureau of Labor Statistics data. 1.2 million Ohioans would get a raise, earn less than $15 an hour, and will get a raise when 15 goes into effect in January 2026. So it's still a massive percent of the population, a huge number of people that will benefit from this wage increase. And what I know, because I've been organizing restaurant workers for 22 years, and we have been, you know, we have a membership of 300,000 restaurant workers, is that a lot of restaurant workers say, well, it's great that some people are offering more, but until I'm guaranteed a full minimum wage with tips on top, because as you know, tipped workers get a sub-minimum wage in Ohio of $5 an hour. So regardless of what the estimates might be about, you know, how much people make in tips or how much people are offered by certain employers, what I've heard from literally thousands of restaurant workers is that until I'm guaranteed a livable wage by my boss, by law, I don't want to go back to a job where they might offer me something now and then I show up and it's different, or they might offer me something now and it changes next year, or they offer me this number you're saying, 15, 17, including tips, and tips fluctuate. They go up and down season to season, month to month, day to day. Until I'm guaranteed a livable wage by law, I don't want to come back. And that is why you've seen such massive staffing crises across low-wage sectors. It's been really hard for employers to find staff in restaurants and retail environments and childcare facilities because people are not willing to work for these really low wages that they were willing to work for before until they're guaranteed by policy. And that's why this initiative is so important.
And again, we'll have plenty of time to debate the issues, but I want to point out that, you know, the restaurant associations are really pushing back on the elimination of the tipped worker minimum wage, which is, you mentioned, it's $5.25 an hour. It would jump to 15 to be one wage, regardless of what position you have in a restaurant. And they also claim, especially small businesses, smaller restaurants, say if we have to pay $15 an hour, that'll lead to job cuts. What do you say to that?
That is what the argument has been over and over and over again for the last 80 years since a federal minimum wage was established. The opposition always says the exact same thing, which is that jobs will be lost and everything will be terrible. But it's never, ever happened in all of the states that have passed 15 or higher. We've only seen job growth. We've only seen the economy continue to grow. In the 7 states that require full minimum wage with tips on top, many of those are 15 or higher. We actually see higher restaurant sales per capita, job growth rates, small business growth rates, and tipping averages than we have in Ohio. So what happens when you pay people more? You don't have to take it from me. The CFO of Denny's in 2021 told shareholders on an analyst call, actually, when we pay 15 plus tips, our workers and bring their families to eat at Denny's, our guest receipts are higher. That's why Denny's is growing faster in California than any state in the United States. And so you don't have to take it from me. The chains are all doing better in the states that have a higher minimum wage, as are small businesses. It's just never happened that jobs are lost after the minimum wage goes up. And by the way, that's true in Ohio. The last time the minimum wage went up, the same argument was made in 2006 when the wage was raised, and it didn't happen. Ohio's economy continued to grow after the minimum wage went up.
Well, the campaign will continue, according to this group, but it won't be on the ballot this fall, but perhaps November of 25. Saru Jayaraman, president of One Fair Wage, thanks very much for joining us on Snollygoster.
Thank you so much. Take care.
We'll be right back.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. And this week it goes to Senator Sherrod Brown. The Democrat is in a tough re-election race in a Trump state, and he did not want to talk about Joe Biden before last month's debate disaster. And Senator Brown certainly does not want to talk about him now. When he has briefly surfaced in public, Brown has been asked if the president should pull out of the race. And Senator Brown will only say he is listening to Ohioans' legitimate concerns about the issue. And that's it. If nothing else, at least he admits that there are legitimate concerns. But for not taking a firm stand, at least not now, Sherrod Brown gets our Snollygoster of the Week award. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.